All right, we are back here with a special guest again. We are at Next Tech 2017 in the beautiful city of Nairobi, Kenya, and I have a special guest. Kenya's, are you the, how many MVPs are there in Kenya?
There used to be a Visual Basic one, but I don't know if it's still current, but as far as I know,
it's you.
I might be the only one.
We have the man here from Kenya, maybe the only MVP, Conrad Akunga. Yes. Tell us a little bit about how you came into tech. I'm interested in tech stories because I'm a nerdy guy too, just like you. How did you decide to become a technologist? Sorry, I'm stuttering there a little bit.
I think when I was in primary school, the very first time I touched a computer, I was just hooked.
I know, right? Like, remember the first time you programmed something and it printed something out? We're like,
oh, yes.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Batch files, and I don't think anybody will remember that stuff, but I've come a long way.
I still use batch files.
Batch files and DBase and stuff like that. Yeah, so it's been quite a long journey.
So how long have you been in technology?
Oh, I think, well, professionally, I would say about 16, 17 years.
Wow. But if you count like the not professionally, like you just messing around, how long has it been?
Almost as long as old as I am.
Nice, that's amazing. So what are you working on now?
Right now, I run a company called Innova. We build software and tools for capital markets, which basically is managing investments, shares, bonds, that kind of thing. Doing analytics, doing modeling, and doing a bit of AI.
I mean, that's my wheelhouse, man. You're talking my love language here. Tell us a little bit. I mean, I know you can't get into specifics, but can you give us sort of a general outlook of if someone wanted to get involved with this kind of technology, how would they build? What kind of tools are you using? What kind of languages? Tell us about that.
Well, this is actually the most exciting bit. We pretty much touch on almost all technologies, almost all operating systems, almost all databases, because the finance industry, you interconnect with many other organizations. You connect with banks, you connect with the payment platforms, you connect with the investment houses, each running their own technology stack on their own systems. So writing stuff that talks to all of these is actually quite a challenge. So we do it all: Oracle, Java, Linux, Unix, C#, VB.
That's amazing. I mean, like just writing regular code that's your own is hard enough, but writing code that talks to all of these different kinds of systems is even harder.
Oh, yes.
How do you do this?
Well, in an ideal world, you would have a specification and documentation that's up to date, but that is the real world. In reality, you will find that you are connecting to a system that was implemented 10 years ago, and the guys who did it have long since retired.
Right.
The documentation that they started with is not the one that they completed with. So you have to do, sometimes you have to reverse engineer things to get it to work. But
I love the preface to this whole thing. In an ideal world, life would be easy, but it's not.
It is not.
Can you give us an example of some of the Microsoft technologies that you are using in your business today?
Well, the main one obviously is .NET. So we use .NET as the framework, but you have a bit of code in C#, a bit of code in, actually most of the code is in C#, but you have a bit of VB and some F#. We're using obviously SQL Server 2012, and in particular CLR in the database. We have done a lot of things there to extend it, to do things that they were not designed to do. So we abuse it, I think is the word.
I think we all abuse computers, though,
yes,
let's be honest,
yes,
with each other.
Yeah, yes.
So what other technology? You mentioned modeling, your financial stuff. That gets into, you said F#.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about how you're using F# and why it's a really good tool for you.
Well, initially we do most of our stuff in C#, but now we quickly go to the limit where you cannot express what you want to do in C#. So we checked out a lot of alternatives, and F# actually was pretty good. So we're using that and looking to increase its usage. But something that we are finding very exciting is Microsoft R Server. So we want to use R to do some of our models and interoperate with all our tools.
That's awesome. And I just recently learned about R Server. The problem with R is that it runs in RAM. And if you don't have a lot of RAM, right, but R Server sort of helps with that, does it not?
Yes.
Tell us what you understand about R Server and why you're excited about it.
Well, before there was R Server, we used to use the plain vanilla R. So interop was a bit of a problem. Mm-hmm. So we have to use a lot of hacks, like exporting things as images and importing them, or exporting them to files and importing them. But now with R server, we can sort of access it near the metal, as it were. So that's mm-hmm. been a huge convenience for us.
Awesome. So you talked about modeling. What kind of modeling are you doing? Is, again, this is my love language. I want to hear all that. Because look, I only get to play make demos. You actually make real stuff. So I'm in awe already. Tell me about the kind of models that you build and why they're so successful.
So something I'm working on, which is actually for the next year, is a pretty exciting model where we want to build tools for governments. Uh-huh. So, for example, if you are a finance minister and you want to know to what level can you raise the interest rates without damaging the economy? That sort of thing is what you want to do. But
holy cow, that's fun stuff. That's like what if scenarios.
Yes, and, yes.
Oh my goodness, I'm sorry. Yeah. I interrupted you.
But what you're building, what you have built today and is in use actually by some of our customers is tools that help you if you have a bond portfolio. And you know some bonds are very reactive to interest rates. Some, if you raise the interest rate slightly, you have a big change, and some with a small change. So the tools help you know that if the interest rates rise by more than a certain threshold, some bonds will become what we call loss-making, so uh-huh. Getting rid of them. So you highlight them and you can action those. So you don't have to be an actuary to be able to make some of these decisions.
I mean, look, I mean, the math involved in this is fantastic. I'm like, serious. Like one day when they fire me because I say something dumb on camera, I will come and work for
look
you.
For me.
You
look
know
for
what
me.
I mean? I work for you. So tell how do, what kind of math do you have to have in order to get this kind of a sort of analysis?
Well, like most young people, when I was in school, I thought mathematics was a huge waste of my time.
Me too. Remember when you took linear algebra and you're like,
yes.
This is the dumbest thing I've ever taken.
Yeah.
And then like 3 years later, you're like, oh man, I should have studied more.
Yeah. So now I am that guy who
me too.
Didn't take it seriously, but now X years later, where X is a large number,
yeah,
now
X is a large number.
Yeah, so it's a lot of algebra, a lot of calculus.
Calculus, man, is fantastic. That's like, I did love calculus, but I did not like linear algebra. And then when calculus met linear algebra in that dark corner of math, that's when things started getting excited for me. So tell us about, so do you have a lot of employees? You have a building? How do you manage all of this?
Well, when we started, like most companies, we began as two guys, but now we are 23. Mm-hmm. We have, we are on seventh floor somewhere, but now, the space is getting a bit cramped, so we need to get more space because we need more people to grow.
That's awesome. So tell us about your journey to becoming an MVP. How did that happen? I mean, you're telling me you might be the only one in Kenya. Definitely he's an MVP. How did that journey happen?
To be honest, I've always been a fan of computers and programming in particular. And when Microsoft set up a local office and began engaging the community, It was a very tiny community,
sure.
So I volunteered to help running the user groups and give the presentations, and one thing led to another. One day I got a package, that's in 2005.
Wow, so you've been MVP for a while.
For a while, yes. So that's my first one, so that's where it began. So since I've also been doing a lot with training and the community to help grow, get people to embrace Microsoft in terms of using the technology now that almost everything is going open source.
Sure.
And nowadays, interoperability is the keyword. So it doesn't really matter what silo you use, you can always connect to something else. Yeah. So that's really how I ended up being an MVP. And
that's
now I'm
awesome.
Still in the community. Yes.
So, what kind of opportunities are there in Kenya and in Africa for those that are aspiring technologists such as yourself? Well, you're not aspiring, you are a technologist.
You are completely spoiled for choice. So the beauty behind computer science and IT is that it's a very wide field. So one of the biggest opportunities is obviously development, writing code. Another one that is often overlooked is testing,
sure.
Especially quality assurance and testing, both from the analytics side and also from the software side, writing tests. Another opportunity is documentation and technical writing.
Yes.
Everybody hates
most people don't like it, but I mean,
but
good documentation,
yes,
save you a lot of time.
Yes. So someone like me who reads the papers all the time,
yeah,
I can tell you they do good documentation and bad, and it makes a huge difference. So
sure.
There's a huge, huge opportunity because, especially for places like Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, where we actually speak English,
mm-hmm.
So it's not really as in our native language, so to speak, why we speak, you know, for business is English, so writing not really a stretch, so it's right. that's also another huge opportunity. And of course, research.
Yeah, I mean, so someone's watching this right now and saying, I want to be Conrad. What are some things they can do now as they're studying to sort of be able to make their own company, to make a difference in Kenya, for example?
What I would advise, especially the younger guys, if you are in high school or just about to get to university, I would advise you to work somewhere, get a job somewhere, and ask them, volunteer if need be, to build some little application for them. It could be something as simple as a record keeping or a video library or something like that. And just build that out. And in the process of learning all the bits you need to get it up and running, you will be exposed to a lot. You'll be exposed to databases, you'll be exposed to security, you'll be exposed to analysis, you'll be exposed to design. You have to talk to people so you can understand what they need. So people's skills, psychology, that people don't read message boxes.
Yeah, wow, so, man, there's a lot of stuff. I mean, there's some stuff in there that I need to do, that I need to become a little better. Mm-hmm. Tell us about the founding of your company. You said you started with two guys. And tell us about your trajectory, how you came. Because when was your company founded?
2011, I believe.
So 2011. So it's been about 6 years. Mm-hmm. Tell us about how you sort of bootstrapped and managed to make the company that it is now. For those that may want to start their own company.
Well, before I began this company, I worked in another company where we did supply chain solutions. Mm-hmm. And I was there for almost 10 years. But I as many people, I got bored. And, you know, I felt that I've pushed the envelope till there's no more envelope to push. Mm-hmm. So I decided to partner with a friend of mine to work in a field where I knew nothing about, which was...
That's the coolest thing, right? We're kind of retentive this way. We find a field that we're interested in. We just sort of dive in and really try to figure it out. Is that what happened for you?
Yeah, so I said, hey, I don't know anything about finance. I am tired of supply chain. Let me, what's the worst that can happen? Yeah. How hard can it be? Famous last words.
Yeah,
so, yeah, so we started up a prototype, pitched it around to banks. And one of our challenges was that in the local economy, the local sector, most of the software was imported.
Right.
So for you, upstarts to show up with your homegrown solutions was quite a novelty, but we impressed with what the solution could do. Yeah. So we traction. So you get one guy. Once you get one guy, it becomes easier to get the next guy. Yeah. So we bootstrapped, actually, as it were, because not really by choice. Just that no one wanted to give us any money.
Yeah.
So so we bootstrapped by circumstances. And yeah, so we have grown, I think, every year. Currently, we have clients in 5 countries. We have clients in, obviously, Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, Zambia, Malawi. And we're hoping to cross into West Africa at some point.
That's amazing. So tell me about the solution you had. You walked in there and you're like, okay, bank people, let us show you. What was it that you showed them? I mean, because your pitch must have been fantastic. Tell us about that.
Well, Our premise was all banks have some sort of core banking solution, but you didn't want to replicate that. And in these banking solutions, they have some module for handling investments. The problem is those modules are very generic.
Right.
So they never cater for the various needs that each market might have. And when you come to capital markets, have some very eccentric requirements. So we realized that there's a need there. So we did a lot of homework, talking to people in the sector. What challenges do you have? We talked to a lot of investment managers, a lot of fund managers. So we quickly got to understand, get a feel of the problem. Then we built a prototype and demoed that. And it was very impressive in the sense that, you know, that barrier where you guys don't have any other client using this, you guys have never heard of you.
Yeah.
Your background is in supply chain, but for what I've been able to do, we think this will be awesome. So we'll take a chance on you. So our first client took a chance on us, and that made the next client easier because, as you know, whenever you're pitching, at some point they will ask you
who else
is using this thing, and until you have an answer, it's a huge, huge pain to cross over.
That's awesome. Mm. Like, it makes me want to go out there and be like, hey, I want to do my own startup. This guy's inspiring me. So tell me a little bit about obviously, once you have the first client, there's some excitement. You know, you do a toast, and then you get the next one, and then you get the next one. There's always growing pains.
Oh, yes.
Tell us about those and how you manage them.
Well, the biggest one really was that, as most solutions are, in an ideal world, I would...
That sentence right there is, in an ideal world.
In an ideal world, yeah. you would build a prototype, so you learn what it is that you should do, then you trash it, and then you do it properly.
Yeah.
But in the real world, the prototype became the product.
Yeah,
so it had a bit of warts, but over time we panel beat it. So we're able to at least weather that. Then there have been a lot of changes in terms of not so much the technology, which has been great,
sure.
But you know, tools and techniques, practices, you know, inversion of control, direct injection, all these things, unit testing and continuous integration, all that stuff. So putting it in after the fact is a lot harder than starting with it, but you know, it's a necessary evil. So that has been one of our, wouldn't say a pain point, more of a, it's like having a pebble in your shoe.
Yeah.
But I think it is a good problem to have, but we have been able to adapt so much to the requirements that the market has had. We are still here, so we must be doing something right.
So tell me about, so obviously at the beginning, and tell me if I'm wrong, this was a software package that you installed locally at the bank, is that right?
Yes.
Are you planning on moving to the cloud? Is there any cloud aspect to it? Is the cloud anywhere in your thinking?
As a matter of fact, we are having a large project right now to basically now this can kick down the road has come to roost, and now we have to adapt, and our current design does not allow us to we want to become Pan-African.
Uh-huh.
Our current model where we go to sites and set it up does not lend itself well to scaling.
Right.
So we are doing a huge project to convert everything to the cloud, and actually the design is it can run both on cloud or on premise, because we figure there will be some stubborn clients,
sure,
especially banks who are very, very conservative,
uh-huh,
who want to see the server light blinking.
Yes.
So those guys will want something on premise, so we'll cater for those, but the same solution will work in the cloud. That will allow us to do a lot of things in terms of accessing more markets, accessing even more clients, because currently the challenge with the traditional model of, you know, leasing the software or licensing it and, mm-hmm, paying license fees and so on, there's a huge upfront cost that you want to get away from. So
sure,
if we have a pay-per-use model, there's no reason to say no. You can come on board, kick the tires. If you like it, you continue. If you don't, no harm, no foul.
So you're saying that with a sort of a pay-as-you-go model, and a cloud model, a service model, people can be like, hey, let's try this for a month. If it's great, it's great. If it's not, it's not.
Correct.
And that sort of enables them to get onto your technology, yes, and enables you to make it rapidly evolve it and make it a little, yes, bit better.
Mm. One of the things that we do is we have a very rapid release cycle, which people normally find insane, but I think it's worked for me, because if this is terrible, is feedback. And I would rather get that feedback in January than in December.
Right.
So we do frequent releases. We get a lot of feedback of, no, remove this, change this, I hate this, I love this, improve this. And that iteration has collectively improved the product for everybody else.
So when you talk about quick release cycle, what are we talking, like weeks, months?
Actually, in a month, you can do even two or three releases.
So that means your DevOps pipeline must be pretty good.
It is.
Tell us. I love it when we talk about our babies. Like, oh yeah, that's a beautiful baby.
Beautiful.
Tell me about your dev, because the DevOps pipeline, it's the last thing people think about, and it's not something they put in initially. Did you have this sort of planned out from the beginning?
Of course not. Of course not.
No, no.
Again,
not.
These are things you learn
in an ideal world.
Yeah, in an ideal
you would
world.
Have that.
Yeah. So, due to, you know, I think I'm a big fan of the University of Hard Knocks.
Uh-huh.
So due to all the pains we have had,
sure,
you know, you deployed and you forgot this, or it's the wrong version, and all those pains have forced us now to sit down and say, look, we need to sit down from scratch and decide what is the process around development, what is the process around testing, what is the process around release, mm-hmm, what is around documentation. Which I need to emphasize, documentation,
right,
because developers, as you know, are horrible,
sure,
at documenting stuff. I mean, it's obvious. But then in 6 months, code that you wrote, you're forgotten. Yeah. So, and it's a reward.
In 2 weeks for me, I forget what I wrote 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, so that has forced us now to get a bit of discipline in terms of how we set up our infrastructure, the team, how the teams correlate, the developers and the testers and the guys we're implementing. Basically, the whole process has we've been forced by circumstance to streamline it. And the beauty of it is once you do it once,
it's done
and you forget about it. It just keeps, you know, it's like a driverless car. You just sit in the back seat and you end up where you're going.
So what does that pipeline look like? Because this is on-prem software right now. Do they get like, it says there's an update, or I mean, how does this work for you?
Well, okay. One of the other things that we are doing, again, to solve the problem of the prototype becoming the product, is to break it down into several components, which we can now update
separately,
independently. Yeah, so the core itself, it's a bit of a pain to update, but we're getting there. But now all these satellite services are very easy to update.
I see.
I mean, everything is version controlled. With a command, you can do a new release. It can version it, package it, you know, create an installer and all that stuff. Upload whatever needs to be uploaded, you know, all that jazz. Mm-hmm. Is done pretty quickly, so I think we have a better off for it.
So what are, and this DevOps conversation to me is amazing, so thank you for that. What are some of the challenges you've found when you've been moving over to the cloud? Because obviously it's a huge project, you say, and usually when us programmers say it's a huge project, we mean there's some headaches. So tell us about some of the challenges you've had in moving to the cloud and how you've been able to overcome them.
Okay, I think the biggest one for me is that there are very many ways to do the same thing.
Sure.
So knowing which one to adopt is pretty much trial and error. Because if you ask guys who have done it before, everybody will swear by the way they have done it.
Of course.
So I think for me that has been the biggest issue. Which approach should we take? But again, that's you iterate quickly and then you learn, okay, this doesn't work. Okay, this might work. Okay, this is really good. So we build upon our past lessons and our past mistakes. Mm-hmm. So that's been our biggest challenge. The other one has been just getting, changing mindsets. You know, everybody wants to see the server light blinking.
Right.
So just changing the mindset that the infrastructure is something you do not even have control or have to worry about. So that paradigm shift is problematic for many, especially conservative customers who are like, well, what do you mean it's in the cloud? Somewhere is it? And you know, who has access to it? And can they steal it? And you know, getting over that is also another challenge. But I think time will help people get over that.
I just thought of a cool project we could do. We make an IoT device with a blinking light that we can install. Every time actually, something happens in the cloud, we'll make the light blink.
Yes,
for your. That's a good idea. Thank you.
I have some as Raspberry Pis at home. I think we can build a thing. We put in the IT managers so you can see.
You can see. Oh, look! Another record went in. It's working. Yeah. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. So, what are you excited about technology-wise for the future? That you're. Because I know as a business owner, you're looking, and as a programmer, you're looking at what you have now. You look at what you had in the past, and you're looking 5 years, 10 years down the road for what you think is coming and how you're going to change it. Because we always look like three steps ahead.
Yes.
Tell us about what your third step is. What are you thinking about in the future technology-wise?
Machine learning.
Yes.
Machine learning. I'm betting the entire company on that in terms of all these tools and techniques. How do we use machine learning to improve our tools and our products? From so many ways, be it from an advisory's perspective, if you are, a typical problem is you got a bonus. Mm-hmm. Hope you got a bonus.
Yeah. And maybe. I mean, I'm not sure. Depends on how I do today.
Give this guy a bonus. So
I like him. We're keeping him.
Yeah. So you imagine you have a $10,000 bonus, then you feel I need to be prudent. I can't just put it in the bank. How should I invest it? You know, currently, most people would be stuck there. I mean, you don't know anything apart from the usual treasury bonds or whatever. Mm-hmm. But if you had a tool that would guide you and ask you questions like, hey, how long are you willing to wait for the investment to pay back? Mm-hmm. Are you willing to take a risk? Are you gung-ho? Are you conservative? Mm-hmm. You know, what's your risk threshold? Is this money that you need right now or money you can be disposed of? I mean, things like those. then that way it will guide you and tell you now, based on what you have said, given that you are very gung-ho and you want returns tomorrow, probably your best investment would be equities. But of course, you know, equities, you can either really make money or really lose money. Or you're very conservative and you want the money in maybe a year or two. Maybe you can put it in government bonds where they don't have crazy returns, but you will not lose. You know, things like those, I think we could do quite a bit along those lines.
Well, if you need someone to write some code for you.
I know how to look.
That's my like, this is my love language, machine learning. Well, we are about out of time. We're supposed to start at 1:30 the next session, so hopefully they'll get started here. Thanks so much. This has been truly enjoyable. Thanks
indeed,
so much for
being with us. I'm glad I came.
Conrad, thanks so much, and hopefully we'll hear from you soon when he becomes the richest man in Kenya and I can come sweep his building. He will let me have a job. I'm pretty excited about that. Thanks so much for spending some time with us, Conrad. Okay. Thanks so much for watching. And we're at Next Tech 2017 in the beautiful city of Nairobi in the beautiful country of Kenya. Thanks so much for watching, and we'll see you around after the break.